Howdy, folks, and welcome to the March 9th, already in March, Uncle Bill.
I can't believe
it. Edition of Dead Pit Radio. Creepy Kentucky.
I'm Uncle Bill. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, buddy.
Where's the time gone?
Where have all the cowboys gone? Where the fuck is Paula Cole gone, by the way?
Who gives a shit?
I don't care. She's hot.
Don't you remember, though, she never shaved her armpits or anything? That was disturbing.
I like that, though.
I do.
Yeah. I was actually watching, oddly enough, it reminds me of this. Every year I get in the mood and I want to watch Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Of course. It's like that a family tradition.
That movie's amazing. And, let me see, I'll plug that right there. There we go. I was watching and noticing the crowd, like, I don't know, I'm guessing when they shot those movies, they were like, just local people were in the crowd and stuff, just whoever wanted to show up. And there was, like, this girl, looked like she was 13 or 14 years old, and that made it even more strange that she was so young. She was, like, just with her arms up, you know, going, you know, yay, yay, whatever. Fucking hairier and shit. Had hairier underarms than me. Like, I was like, what the fuck? I mean, do women, like, when they don't shave, do they have them that fucking hairy?
Let me tell you something.
Because she looked like she was, like, not even out of high school.
There are a few things that really make me sick, but that's one of them. I can't handle that. Like,
yeah,
hair under the arms stuff, ain't no way.
It's unfortunate. But, anyway, beyond the ladies with the hairy underpits and shit like that, we have a show this week. We do have a show. A lot of people complaining and a lot of idiots on the message board. Well, one idiot in particular. And I wanted to make this point perfectly clear to him because I know he listens to the show. And I, you know, don't take offense to me calling you an idiot, but you've just been acting like an idiot lately. We do not handle Into the Pit. When you buy Into the Pit, you buy it from Kelly Marcotte.
What happened with Into the Pit?
Nothing happened with Into the Pit. We've got one guy on there that's like thinking that Dead Pit is done because we ain't sending him his DVD or something. And he just ordered it like 3 days ago. We do not have Into the Pit DVDs to sell.
That's right. Yeah. We have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with that. And by the way, that brings us to another subject, too. Last weekend, we held our, is your and I's first big-ass auction bash.
That's true.
And that brings us to another point, too.
We're going to be doing another one a week from tomorrow.
We're going to be doing another one for a week tomorrow. Somebody brought up that it's St. Patrick's Day. Is that really a fucking holiday that anybody gets that, like, amped up about?
Not around here, it's not.
I don't know.
The only thing that happens around here, if you don't wear green, you're going to get, like, pinched.
Right.
That's it.
But in regards to our last auction, it went really, really well, except for one particular person. But that, I mean, that person just...
You paste a trash.
They're just going to do whatever they're going to do. But in terms of sending out things, I've already got all the stuff sent out to anybody that bought anything and the people that paid. There's a couple people that didn't pay, two people I can think of. So those people will not be in the next auction, I guarantee you that, because I ain't putting up with this shit. Like, if you don't pay for your stuff, like, you're not going to be coming back and just sitting there and bidding on shit. That's ridiculous. And several people anyway that, or one person in particular, ends up portraying several people. That ain't going to happen this time either, you motherfucker, so you might as well just forget it.
Yeah, he was acting like he was Tony Moran in there this past weekend.
He's a cocksucking retard, ain't no doubt about that.
So anyway, speaking of cocksucking retards, the movie we're reviewing this week is a sequel to a movie that was highly praised. Believe it or not, like, you know what we should do since we only have one review? Since I didn't have a chance to watch anything else, why don't we review both of the Human Centipede movies?
That's a good idea. So we'll review Human Centipede and then the new one, Human Centipede 2, full sequence.
Yeah. And then the, I think there's already a third one in the works, which that'll probably come out a year or so from now. The final sequence, evidently.
It's the final sequence.
And that way, if that one
turn
makes,
him into a butterfly or
if
something.
That one makes enough money, they'll call it the new beginning to the sequence in the next one.
Right.
We do have that planned. Also, the next segment, we're going to have Nathan from Horrorhound Magazine on. And Horrorhound Weekend is coming up in 2 weeks. Columbus. Get ready for it.
Nathan Boom Boom Hanneman's going to be on the show.
Yeah, Jeff Hanneman's younger brother.
So stick around. We'll ask him about Slayer. Kerry King and how Kerry's doing. And
in all seriousness, though, like, we did have a really good discussion with him, like, on all things conventions. And, you know, I think he drops a couple of names that people might not realize is coming to Horror Hound.
Yeah, people are going to really shit and cream them pants.
So it's time to shit and cream all over yourself. Now, another thing I wanted to mention, and it's sad. I mean, I don't know what you think about it. Ever since we've been doing this show, I don't know if I've ever seen the genre in such a state right now. I mean, I don't know if you want to do a little mini state of the genre address.
Yeah, we used to have a show that was like state of the genre address, but to be honest, there's not really a genre to do like a state of anything on right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say, too, and we, you know.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that shit, didn't we?
We did.
That's Larry Coleman.
It'll be all right. Evidently nobody's going to get the phone. Okay, there we go. My deal is, you know, a lot of people saying, well, this is the time to support your independence, okay? There's two kinds of independents out there. 90% of the independent movies that are out there are no-budget movies that people use, you know, their little HD mini cams to shoot. Then there are the other movies that actually kind of have a budget. And maybe there are some of those that we don't get to see. But the majority of those that we see are movies that are picked up from, you know, IFC or Fox, you know, Fox's Atomic or whatever the hell those little companies are, that they get some type of festival buzz and they get picked up by a larger studio. But the fact is like, it's just, I think now in independent movies, the big difference is between now and the 70s and even the 80s, like, you don't have any risk involved in making these movies. I mean, you can get a camera, you can get bottom line, what do they call them, the little red cameras that are out? You can get the best camera out there to make a movie for $10,000. You know, and that is like, I mean, I think probably The Dead Next Door had a budget that was like four times that or something in the 80s.
It had over a $100,000 budget, I know that.
Yeah. So, like, I just, you know, I don't get it. I mean, independent movies now is a totally different animal than it was in the 80s even.
I think it just boils down to the fact that people that are making independent movies now have no idea how to make a fucking movie. Like, they just watch a lot of movies, and they think that because they watched a lot of movies.
And they go to a lot of fucking conventions.
Yeah, they think that somehow qualifies them to be able to make a movie.
And they promote stuff that sucks dick. I mean, it just looks stupid, like, you know, something versus zombies. Abraham Lincoln versus werewolves or something. I mean, it's stupid. Just the bottom of the barrel shit. And I'm easily saying that this period is the toughest, has been the toughest time to do a show on horror movies. I mean, it's been like, what, probably about 4 or 5 weeks since we even had a news portion on the show. Not because we didn't want to do a news portion, but because there is nothing to fucking talk about. There's nothing going on. I mean, I don't even know of anything really coming out of anything I'm looking forward to the rest of this goddamn year. I mean, what is it coming out? Maybe the new Texas Chainsaw movie or something?
The weird part about it is, too, you can see it in almost everything. Because used to be, I would get probably 3 or 4, you know, requests for movies that were getting ready to come out every couple of days that companies would want to send. And now I get probably like 1 a month or something like that. It's like nobody is putting out anything and nobody is.
Well,
really,
yeah, I mean, that's another aspect too. I mean, as far as Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff goes, what the fuck is coming out?
There's not. And that's one of the big problems too. Because people say the mainstream horror market's dried up, but really all the horror markets have dried up right now. There's really not a whole lot of anybody to get excited about.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a big boom period, 2005, 2006, 2007. And, like, it was I don't know, it just flooded the market with horror movies and stuff.
I think another big problem, too, is now a lot of these companies who were just getting by re-releasing their old titles on Blu-ray, it's like they're running out of shit to re-release. Now you're going to have to come up with something else to put out there.
I mean, it's a sad thing, and look, I'm sure there are people that try to argue this, but I can flat out tell you, there's no interest. There is little to no interest in any kind of stuff that's coming out. I mean, it's true. I mean, there's nothing. You know, I can remember back in the day, 2007, 2008, the popularity of horror films was probably at all-time high for that period, you know. And, like, there was news topics. We could have done two Dead Pit shows a week.
Yeah.
Probably. But it's just like, it's kind of sad. I mean, I think that we're in a period now that's like very similar to the mid-90s, the early to mid-90s.
Yeah, we are. But you know the good thing about that is, though, I mean, the people that have been fans of the horror genre over the years have been through periods like this, too. And you always, everything gets weeded out. Like, there were so many companies and everything was so bloated. And people were giving these other people, like these really hack directors, all these projects and stuff to do. And it just got to be like you would go and see a movie. And, I mean, it was exciting because everything was coming out. Like, stuff was coming out week after week after week. But it's like you ultimately were just completely disappointed by all the movies because they were just putting them out like fast food joints. You know, they were just throwing them out there.
And I even think, too, because I was looking, I don't know if I showed you this, but if you look on Wikipedia, you can look at the top grossing films of 2011. And, like, I think all of the top 10 was either a sequel or something that was based off of a remake of a TV show or something like that. Every one of them.
Yeah.
And that's sad. I mean, every one of them. It's not like one.
Well, they're not really making anything, like, original. Like, look at the movies that even, like, the mainstream movies that don't have anything to do with horror that are coming out that people are really looking forward to. The Avengers, which is just all of the movies that they had made, like Iron Man and the Hulk, and all those movies they made before, just
they're running out of that shit.
Combine them all together into, like, one movie.
They're going to have the Submariner movie.
There's only so much stuff that you can remake. That's the problem. There's only so much stuff that is popular enough that people would recognize it and you can remake it into like a movie. And then you actually got to actually maybe try to write original stuff again.
Yeah.
I know it's a concept. I mean, I realize.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's sad. I'm a fan of the genre. I'll always be a fan of the genre. But we're in one of those periods right now where, you know, the major studios aren't taking a chance on anything. They haven't been for a few years. And it seems like the movies that they greenlight, and we see previews for some of these movies, not even the horror stuff. Like, you're thinking, who's going to watch that shit? Like, a few things that come to mind right off the bat were like remakes of they're remaking the Three Stooges. Why? What audience is that going for? Your fans of the Three Stooges, none of them are younger than fucking 30 years old, or a very small percentage of them are younger than 30 years old. So those people, they don't want to see these jackasses, fucking Will Sasso, playing the fucking Stooges. You know, nobody wants to see that shit. The same thing goes for it just seems like there's a big disconnect between, you know, what studios just have to come out and what movies will actually make money or be successful. Like, I think a lot of these studios just want to fucking, just because they have a brand, they want to come out with something, regardless of how awful it's going to be.
That seems to be the trend right now, though. You buy up something that's a viable, has been viable in the past, and then you just coast off of the name of it. But that's what I'm saying. The problem is they're running out of that shit. Now you got just the lowest common denominator that's going to be coming out, like stuff that they can possibly remake. Now, in my opinion, we are in like a dead period for horror films right now, just all around. The only thing I hope is that this is not the same as like it was for the music industry, because in my mind, the music business has really not ever recovered from about 1996 on. Like, after all the digital stuff came in, the music that comes out now is just, it's not even really what I think is music. It's just a brand of, like, a person that's a personality somehow or another. Either they had a sex tape, or they were a pop diva, or they were on some fucking reality show or something. So they put out, like, a CD and whatever, like, it becomes popular. And it's not really music. I'm hoping that that's not what happens to horror. I'm hoping that horror doesn't get to the point where it can't recover again, like, where there's not any originality left, and then you just get the same shit recycled over and over and over again, and it just becomes
TV. Yeah, just basically getting away from the gimmick shit, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what's wrong with actually just having, you know, horror movies? What I liked about them when I was a kid, and still like about some of them today, is, you know, the last thing I can think of that happened like that was the French Invasion a couple of years ago, where there's shit in these movies that you normally don't see. There's something that's dangerous, like, that we don't, you know, and they don't do that anymore. Like, it's shit like, you know, Last House on the Left, stuff that you're not supposed to see, you know. There's nothing like that anymore. I mean,
well, there's nothing like that that comes out in the theater. Right. There is shit like that out there, though. We'll talk about that later.
Well, we can thank the foreigners.
It's, God. Yeah, I mean, it would be a lie to say that this isn't depressing. It's a depressing time.
But, like, the things that are exciting about the genre sometimes are, like, when you hear a buzz about something and it just, you know, they take you somewhere where the genre, they take you to a place where the genre could be. And occasionally that happens, but it seems like more and more, like, yeah, you get that experience at home, which sucks. And then, like, the digital stuff is getting more and more prevalent even at the movie theater. So
I've really given up on, like, the mainstream, because here's the problem. They've pushed, like, I don't know if it's what you would call it, society or just the film industry, have pushed the bar of what's shocking so high now that I don't even think you could show in a theater anymore what would actually it would take to shock somebody. Like, I just don't think, without getting, like, an NC-17 rating, I don't think you can go any further than, like, Hostel or some of that shit that, like, came out and still be a horror. And that's the stuff that people would want to see, and that's why it comes out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, what I miss about, like, I don't know how long it's been. It's been a while since, like, we did a review, or we went to watch a movie where we just had, like, whether it's even something that we hated, like Rob Zombie's Halloween, where we actually had passion about what the fuck we were talking about. And a lot of these newer movies, newer films anymore, I mean, even the ones that come out, fuck, what the hell has come out, you know? You're just kind of like, eh. You know, I was that way for Paranormal Activity 3 and The Devil Inside. I mean, I didn't get really that pissed off at the movie. And I didn't really, I mean, I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. I was just sort of, you know, whatever.
I was pissed off about The Devil Inside just because that's just horrible filmmaking. I don't care what kind of movie
it is. Yeah, but you don't know what, you know, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, it just seems like the thrill is gone, kind of.
Isn't that a B.B. Key song?
Yeah.
B.B. King. Oh, sorry.
Steve Ray Vaughan did it too.
He did. The thrill is gone, bitch. It's gone away.
It's a shame because it's just paint by numbers. The mainstream stuff is completely paint by numbers, and the people that can do, you know, that could do great stuff, it seems like they're just doing fucking remakes, like everybody else.
It's true.
So anyway, that's our little rant for the show, I guess, to free up some more time. Oh.
But anyway, after we're done bitching about the state of the genre, though, keep in mind that we are still celebrating genres of the past, like decades of the past, and what better way to do that than to buy some old stuff from us off our auctions.
That's right.
So, celebrate what horror used to be and buy shit off us.
Since we're also nominated for Rondo Award yet again, you can go vote for us.
Listen.
We're going to dedicate this show.
Listen to me.
Look, I want to dedicate this show to Boris Karloff.
I think that voting's up in April, right? Sometime in April.
Yeah.
I'm saying this right now. We will never fucking win a Rondo. Even if we win a Rondo, we won't win a Rondo. So you can vote if you want to, but I'm telling you, we'll never win. It doesn't even matter. And it the other part of it is, it doesn't really matter anyway. Like, even if we do fucking win, the only thing that would happen is if we won the Rondo, then we could say to the people at the Rondo, hey, we won this Rondo.
Yeah, we're big deals.
Dig it or fuck off. I mean, I don't know what else.
Well, it's very similar, perfect thing to talk about, too, in this little segment, since we're not doing any news. The Rondo Awards, in many ways, is kind of like what the Academy Awards has turned into. A bunch of people kissing each other's asses and sucking each other's dicks. It's basically the truth. Because everybody else, is anybody else out there telling the truth about the fucking Rondo Awards? Everybody else that's nominated for shit, I'm telling you right now that fucking award show we went to was easily the shittiest thing I've ever been to at a horror convention. Nothing even close.
I think that people are actually scared in ways to talk about the Rondo, because I think that people are under the impression that if you are a Rondo award winning anything, it makes any fucking difference to anything, like your sales or the people that recognize you, or if you're renowned by somebody. I don't think that even happens, man. Like, I put it to you this way. The people that I know that are actually really good at something, I don't hear about them from the fucking Rondo Awards. I just hear about them because somebody mentions them, like, that they're really good at something. That shit doesn't matter in this field. Like, this is such a cold.
What I'm saying is, though, is the people, it's the same type of people. And you see them all the time at conventions, too. Like, but I guess we're the ones you love to hate, Dead Pit is.
Well,
because we're the only motherfuckers. And I am kind of proud of this, too, that are honest regardless of what fuck. Like, if we're at a show, we're honest about that fucking show. The promoter will even tell you the same fucking thing. And I think, like, in a lot of ways, if, you know, not all the time, but the promoters, if you're honest with them, you know, if you honestly critique the show, like Friday Night Film Fest, it's like a fucking sauna.
Right.
Last couple years. Okay, it's true. It's not a fucking opinion. It was 110 degrees. People get so bent out of shape. Again, certain people get so bent out of shape. The fucking dead winter shit. Dude, if somebody could look at those posts and get mad, you're a fucking retard. You are a fucking retard.
I think that I'll even go farther than that. The biggest thing that gets me upset about people, especially people that, and I've seen this so much, even in like the small little like horror community that we know of and stuff too.
Yeah.
Why is it so fucking important to people that you're accepted or liked by everybody?
Right.
Like, what the fuck difference does it make? Let me explain something to people. If you don't know this already, the lack of insight into this is amazing to me. You are in this genre because you weren't accepted by a large portion of other people. Like, we are doing this show for people that generally don't have anywhere else to get this kind of information from.
Right.
So the idea that in this small little microcosm in this show and everything, that there's people in this horror community that still want to be liked so much, but yet that's the thing they bitch so much about, is how, you know, nobody respects horror fans and nobody accepts horror fans. It's like, you're doing the same exact fucking thing. But
yeah.
You want to bow down to the fucking Rondos or some bullshit or the fucking whatever, like, whoever it is
it's
that
such
you
a
like.
Prestigious award, because, you know.
You don't have to be liked. And I don't give a fuck if we are liked. That's the thing. Like,
that's why I said we're the ones you love to hate.
Yeah, it's not even necessary. The reason I think people like us is because we aren't liked a lot of times by other people.
Yeah. Well, and people, I think, you know, a certain minority of people appreciate our vulgarity, our honesty, and just the fact that we cannot be bought as far as like our opinions go. I mean,
I think that's probably what pisses people off the most.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that You really can't fall in line when you don't have anything to, like...
And, dude, let's be honest. Okay, we even made fun of, like, you know, the Darkwoods, and they were nice to us and everything. But the fact is, you have a fucking show in Lebanon, fucking Kentucky. You're fucking retarded, dude. Lebanon, Kentucky. That's what, like, I would have said, nobody asked my opinion on that. And nobody asked, Goose was the, you know, one of the main people that ran the first Darkwoods. And I think he got kind of, you know, blackballed for some reason out of the, well, or either he thought it was as bad an idea as we did. The thing is, people, like, they think, oh, the town screwed us, everything else, whatever else bullshit they're going to say. You screwed yourself. You screwed yourself. And, you know, the convention thing, for some reason, people just don't have common sense. The majority of these people don't. I mean, I don't know what to tell them. I hate to be mean about it, but...
Well, it's just true, though.
I mean, they see a big crowd at a whorehound show, at a Fright Night, at a Scarefest, and they're like, oh, shit, I can do this. Let's bring the same, you know, two or three, we can afford only two or three people. Let's bring the same people that are already here, but let's have it in a little shit-fuck town.
Well, I think that's what's causing a lot of this stuff to die off, too, is that they just see dollar signs. They see what these other shows are doing, and they think, let's just copy exactly like what they're doing, but not really put any thought into it, and that'll get us money, but it just doesn't work that way.
Well, see, yeah, I mean, if we promote a show, I can tell you as a horror fan, when you go to that show, you're going to fucking have fun. You're going to see people you want to see, okay? And we don't go to these little shit-fuck shows because you're going to be walking around looking like Cody, wondering what the fuck to do, okay? You're going to be the only one there. You're going to feel like a retard for paying $15 to stand around and look at the vendors looking at you.
Me looking at you. Looking at me and the vending table. Yeah.
I just, there are a ton of idiots in the horror community, like on Facebook and shit too. That's a whole other topic we could get to at some point. My God. You don't like the shit I say, delete my ass from Facebook. I don't need your fucking shit. Another thing too that I've talked about, I don't know what you think about it. And we've talked, goddamn, we can fucking talk about anything, by the way. The latest trend of these trolls, like, oh, God, I'm glad Joe Paterno died. Fuck him. Do you go around? Yeah, I mean, whenever a celebrity dies or Whitney Houston or something, you saw a ton of that shit with Whitney Houston dying. Like, what do you think about? I mean, do people really think that, or are they just saying that shit to get a rise out of people?
I don't even, honestly, on the internet, I think that about 90% of whatever happens on the internet is just somebody trying to get attention anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't really believe that I just think they want somebody to actually either call them out on it or to just comment on it in one way or the other. They don't care. It's like attention. It's like attention for the sake of attention, which is what a lot of the reason why the internet exists, really.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah. Honestly, like when it comes to Facebook and stuff, most of the time, if I'm posting stuff and it's pissing you off, that's what I wanted to do. So go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And another thing, too, to bring up real quick before we go on to something else a little bit lighter, too. We've talked to a lot of celebrities in the past who have had, a lot of female celebrities who have had stalkers, and even other people who have had stalkers as well. And they're mostly seem to be genuinely obsessive kind of people that just follow these women around and, like, try to get into their lives and stuff. There's no way to really get around it, man. There are people that listen to this show that are insane. I don't know how else to put this. There's a couple of people that I've known since we've been doing this show. We've been doing this show for 6 years now, I think. That there's really, genuinely something wrong with them, and they are obsessed with certain parts of the show, or even obsessed with, like, our lives
right.
and things like that.
Too. You're talking about besides Jess, right?
Yeah, well, besides Jess, yeah. And it's just, it's, in one way, it's sad. Well, it's completely sad. I guess not in one way it's sad. But in another way, you kind of like, what? Who are these people? Like, where the fuck do they come from that they're that
crazy?
I'd like
to kill at least three or four of them.
They're just fucking...
Throw the bodies at Blackberry.
I mean, I know that one particular person that is doing this listens to all these shows religiously. So I just want to take this time to this particular person.
You know who you are.
Do you realize, seriously, I mean, and I do a lot of this, I do this for a living too. Do you realize that you're really fucking insane? I mean, do you have any insight into your behavior is insane?
No.
Not in touch with reality or that anybody else would do. Like, it's time to really step back and take a look at what's going on with this. This is just a horror radio show.
Right.
Okay?
And we haven't talked much about horror for 30 minutes, but...
We're just a show, but... There's some people out there that really latch on to this kind of stuff and take it, like, a step too far. And I'm sure those people...
I'm amazed at the people that listen to our show that have no sense of humor at all. Like, how... Like, what in the fuck, how did you stay around?
Well, there must be something about this show that they just, that they just like grab onto, but I don't know what it is exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's my major issue. Like, the majority of the people that we've had problems with are people that just do not get any kind of humor at all. Like, they're just completely dry. But whatever. It is what it is. Do what you want to do. So anyway. We do have an interview to get to, folks. Horror Hound Weekend is coming up in 2 weeks, and we're all going. It's going to be a big time. It's going to be a fun time. We may have an announcement. I don't know about this show, but probably on one of the midweek shows about we don't have a table at Horror Hound, which is the first time we haven't had a table at a show since probably like 2 years. But we will have... Hopefully, a new item to sell. You just have to catch us and come up to us. So we'll let you know about that. Probably on the midweek obliteration. Definitely on the message board. So.
Are you going to talk about what it is? Or are you going to wait?
No, we'll wait.
Until we actually have it.
We'll wait and make sure we have it first.
That sounds like a plan.
So, anyway, Nathan Hanneman, the co-founder Horror Hound Magazine and Horror Hound Weekend. Probably about a 45-minute long discussion with him. When we come back from that, we're going to review The Human Centipede 1 and The Human Centipede 2 here on
DeadBeer.com.
Invited to a very eerie undertaking on Saturday at midnight. That's when Phantasm, the most terrifying movie of all time, will have one special preview. Phantasm, the film that puts the fun in funeral. And as for a fiendish story, it does have a burial plot. Come prepared to scream, because if this one doesn't scare you, you're already dead. Phantasm from Avco Embassy Pictures. Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent or guardian.
Couple years, I think, since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know. You can come on anytime.
All right.
You're welcome on with Sean, because we did have Sean. We've had Sean Clark on. Fuck, I don't know how many damn times.
Yeah.
But Horror Hound Columbus, which is coming up here in a couple weeks. What what was the deal with, I'm sure a lot of people wanting to know that don't, Indianapolis shows usually this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with that, and why the choice of Columbus exactly?
Well, unfortunately, we're always at the mercy of hotels, and our Indianapolis hotel had a huge 5-week, I think it's like a pool and dart tournament come in, and they wanted to buy like a 5 to 10 year lease on the entire month of March. If the story's right, essentially the so lucrative, there's no way that they're gonna say no to it, and we lost our hotel. So the choice was either move the show to a different month, and the only time the show was available to us was in September. So that's what we did. We moved it to September. But the last thing in the world we would ever think about doing is giving up our weekend. We've had the same weekend for 5 years. So instead of just moving to Cincinnati and doing two Cincinnati shows in a row, we decided to try out Columbus just to see what would happen.
Yeah, you had a really good idea for this show too. I don't think anybody's ever done this that I know of though, which was like the female women in horror was the theme of the show, isn't it?
Yeah, we decided to do a tribute to women in horror. And it's always difficult doing guest lists because the last thing, I mean, the thing I dislike the most about putting together convention guest lists is the randomness of it all. So when we were trying to come up with a good idea, I thought that was the glue to hold everything together.
And it's you know, doing the reunion thing, which you guys have definitely done in the past. I mean, it's kind of, you know, as far as reunions that a lot of people care about, it's kind of hard to keep to keep it fresh. You know,
yeah.
I mean, of course, you
could
do
there's so many shows competing that you don't want to repeat anything anyone else is doing too.
Right. I mean, you could do the Mutilator reunion, but I mean, five people would care.
I think that was the show when I knew that the reunion trend was dying, is when I saw they were having a fucking Mutilator reunion. Like, how many people even know the people in that?
I think ultimately that show didn't even happen though. I mean, that was a few years ago, but, yeah, and the Women of Horror thing definitely is an original idea, something that hadn't been done, and Pam Grier, who a lot of people are excited about, I've never really seen her do a show. I know for sure in the area, she's kind of a rare guest to get.
And the types of shows she does, because she's such a bigger name, she'll do some of the bigger, like, Wizard Worlds, Comic-Con type things. So it was, we met her at a show last year, and she was such a sweetheart, we just had to have her.
Yeah. I think the other big guest is, of course, Elvira, who we all know and love. And I think in terms of the people going through the guest list and things that CK and I are most excited about, oddly enough, would probably be John Paul, who a lot of people don't know. I think this is his first convention, isn't it?
Yeah, we accidentally found him, is how I like to refer to it as. The Lee Carr, who is the guy that found him, he's the one that got John Amplis to do his first show, and Terry Alexander, and we were putting together the Day of the Dead reunion, and we had some information on possibly tracking down John Paul. And we tried many times in the past, but we called him up and said, "You want to give this another shot?" And in less than 24 hours, we had him. It was just a weird series of events.
Now, with him, was it one of those deals where he just didn't realize that, you know?
Yeah, he had no clue. He didn't even know that I don't even think he knew his photo was the poster.
Well, that's strange right there, yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be a real eye-opener for him.
And as far as the other, you've got like a pretty big reunion, Day of the Dead folks, some other Dawn of the Dead folks. And the Romero thing seems to be really popular at shows as far as just people from the Romero movies and stuff like that. Is there somebody else from that group of movies that's often requested that is kind of like somebody left that you'd love to get for a show?
Yeah, Galen Ross, she's done a lot of shows, but she gets a lot of requests, and we tried to get her for this one, and it just didn't happen. And but surprisingly, Asia Argento from Land of be the most requested of all of them.
Yeah, I think something with Galen Ross, though, she only does shows in spurts, I've noticed. Like, she'll do, like, maybe one or two right in a row, and then she won't do any for, like, a long time. I don't know why, but...
Yeah, I don't know if she gets burnt out, and then she finally gets over it. I don't know.
It's been
a while since I've seen her.
The Aja Argento thing, too, I mean, that's, that's, like... most horror nerd's dream woman right there.
It really is.
Because, of course, she came from the loins of Dario Argento, and she's also hotter than hell. So, I mean, that's got to be a must-have, like, at some point in the future.
Yeah, that's a big deal to get her, and we've been offered her, and it's just never really lined up for us to make it happen. Some of the things we got working on in the next year or so, it could become a real possibility.
Yeah, so, I mean, aside from the guests, there's a lot of other people that are there. I don't want to leave all of them out, but there's no way I can remember all of them. I know Stuart Gordon's going to be there.
Yeah, this is Carolyn Purdy Gordon's first show. It's his wife.
Yeah.
She's never done a convention, and that was the one I was really excited about. I'm a huge, huge Reanimator fan.
And I think
those two.
Barbara Crampton hasn't really. I mean, this is the first show I've seen her at in a long time.
Yeah, especially in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And going through, I mean, like he said, I think pretty much you've got a lot of the cast of Day of the Dead that are going to be there too.
Yeah, and Tasso. I mean, how many people have been asking for Tasso all these years?
Very true.
I don't know if you realize this. Somebody in Tasso's family, I think. It's not Tasso, but it might be his wife or brother, something like that. He's like a sculptor as well, and he makes all these really amazing, like Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead themed sculptures.
I think he used to do conventions or something, but this has been years ago.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's got some amazing stuff. That whole family's pretty talented.
But
yeah, love to sit down and chat with them for a while.
Speaking of women and horror, though, I definitely want to bring this up because it's a pretty big announcement. I think that. Our friend Sean Clark made about Jamie Lee Curtis.
Shit your pants.
He actually got her to agree to do, I think, one show so far. I don't know if she's going to do a series of them or what. Were you surprised when you found that out, or is that something that you kind of thought was eventually going to happen? And what are the possibilities of seeing JLC at a horror house?
JLC.
I mean, it's something we've talked about forever, and... there's got to be that key to finally get, you know, anyone to do a show, whether it's because of a project they are working on or something. And we've been talking about it a lot, so it didn't surprise me, but it did at the same time. It's just I just always expect everyone's open to doing shows. It's just I thought maybe 10 or 15 years and a movie project forcing her to do it would make it happen.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because right around the time he made that announcement, I saw something on Yahoo that said she's wanting to get back into acting, like, I mean, serious, like, TV shows. She's doing some sort of new TV show soon, too.
Yeah, she just had a cameo on, like, one of the CSIs or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's almost like she took a hiatus there for a while and just got into Activia really, really hardcore. I don't know. But
she wants to help people, shit, let's be honest. But, I mean, honest to God, though, I think that's one show, like, if you were to get her to show, you could, you know, she would be the whole show, basically.
Yeah,
you'd basically have to just let it be her show, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals, like I think I was telling you before, I mean, it's just like, you know, local media would be huge. You know, people just, because she's a bona fide movie star, I mean, no doubt. I mean, a lot of these people, like, we definitely look up to them and stuff like that, but... they're all in our circle, like, of just, you know, cult horror movies and stuff. But she's,
yeah.
You know, she's worked with James Cameron and, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these big movie stars, so.
Yeah, she's definitely one of the names when you say her name in a horror, you know, any horror fan instantly knows who she is, and that's rare.
So is there no plans on that you can announce, right?
Nothing I can comment on.
Right. Okay. So this
but
show,
like the, I think it was the 35th anniversary. What is next year?
Yeah, next year.
Isn't that amazing how that worked out that way?
Yeah.
I'm sure nobody's going to do anything with that. Anyway.
Cue Ted DiBiase's music.
Yeah.
Something else though I wanted to mention to you that I thought was I'd read that you had opted against doing photo ops at this show, and just what you think about the whole general, you know, concept, because it seems to be last year or two in the horror convention circles or whatever, it seems to be a new thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's certain guys that that just get in certain promoters' ears about how much money they could make. I have a congressman calling me on the other line trying to get my vote, by the way.
Yeah, well, fuck you, man.
I don't know if they get in the ear of some promoters, and I've seen shows where they just won't allow photography at tables, and I mean, we tried a photo op thing back in Pittsburgh way back when, and the whole thing just fell apart just because we wouldn't allow or we wouldn't disallow people to take photos at the celebrities' tables. I just think that's really messed up to. Any time it's happened at our shows, it's completely up to the celebrity and their managers. And there's been shows where they've put their foot down and made, you know, this is the rules, this is in the contract, and I've gotten into fights about it. But the I'm a big fan of reunion photo ops, and that's what I really, really enjoy. I got my American Werewolf in London photo op with Griffin Dunn and David Naughton and John Landis, and it's one of my favorite photos. So anytime we do reunions, I'm totally for photo ops. But if it's just a single, you know, unless it's a really big name and there's just no time to do photo ops at their table, I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, the thing we were talking about, at some point there has to be a line drawn, because the only next step after that is you charge like $5 to shake their fucking hands or something. I mean, what's the next logical step from there? Somebody's just got to be like, look, good Lord, man, you're making like $25 just to sign your name, and then like what, sometimes they make, if they're at their table or something like that, you buy something off of them, it's $40 or $50. Just settle the fuck down with all this extra stuff that has to go on.
Well, I think
it's a struggle. We had Corey Feldman last year at the NAD show, and generally his deal is that the, you know, depending on what manager books him, his deal is that the promoter sets the price. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of people noticed that he was $20 flat, free photo, and that's easily the cheapest he's ever been. And it's just any time we have the opportunity to set the price, we really do try to get it as low as the as is the standard within the industry. And I get a little scared that the standard's going to get closer to $30.
Well, something that I've noticed, too, that I really like about the Warhound shows, and sometimes, like at some of these other shows, they don't really have I don't know if you guys have a rule on it, but I don't know if I've ever seen a celebrity not have the price list at the table at a Warhound show. And a lot of the times, like, the celebrities will actually change the price as the show goes. I mean, I've seen it happen.
I hear about that, and that's horrible. If it happens at our shows, I want people to tell me right away. But it may be just being the managers that certain shows are using that we don't use.
Okay. So you don't have, like, a rule. I thought you actually had the rule that you had to have the price on the table, because I think I've seen that at every Whorehound.
No, I think it's mostly just the like, we work with Sean Clark pretty extensively, and some other people like Chris Rowe and Derek Mackey, and I think a lot of those guys know what they're doing, and that's the difference, I think, in some other shows.
Now, we do have Whorehound Columbus, of course, coming up here in a couple of weeks. You've also started to make some announcements on the return to Indianapolis, which would be about a year and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's coming up in September.
Yeah, we just launched the site.
It looks like it's going to be a pretty huge show, from what I understand.
A lot of stuff's going our way as far as planning goes. I don't think I've been this excited about going after names, and almost every single person we've asked has said yes so far.
So just you can go ahead and tell us who the big guest is going to be at that show. It's fine.
Everybody wants to know.
I can tell you this much. The focus is definitely a Terminator reunion. And as if you found the site, we already have Michael Biehn and Edward Furlong, and we even have Danny Cooksey, who most people would remember from Salute Your Shorts. That's what I like him most for.
Yeah, but you remember him as the ginger kid in T2 as well.
Likes Guns N' Roses. I think he was in like the last couple seasons of Different Strokes too.
Yeah, he was the new kid they added to stir up interest.
Yeah, he's like the cute kid in the last season or two to try to save a show. You know.
Yeah, but we're also going to have a very rare appearance by Miss Linda Hamilton.
What? That's killer though. It really is. I'm curious though. Are you going to get Schwarzenegger? Because I think that's the only logical.
You know, I heard he wants $100,000, and I just don't see that in our budget.
Are you sure? Oh, God.
It's one of those deals, though, where you could, like, with Schwarzenegger, I think that you could almost get away with charging, like, $100 an autograph or something.
I'd pay $100. I'd get two or three things signed, to be honest.
So, like, $100,000, I mean, if you could get, like, 1,000 people to pay $100, I mean, you know, there you go.
You could easily do that, man. You could easily pay it back. But who the hell's got $100,000 just like, oh, here you go. Take it.
Yeah, I mean, and I could be wrong. It could be $1 million for all I know. But, I mean, I know he does appearances at bodybuilder events. I know he was just in Ohio. I think he was just in Ohio last week.
I think he'd probably be one of those guys, though. If it's $100,000, it's probably for like one day or something.
Yeah,
maybe for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just a speech.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
So, we're really putting a lot of emphasis on the Terminator thing, and we just booked, no one knows this, but we just finalized a deal for Lance Henriksen to be involved.
Hell yeah.
And Peter Kent, who was Schwarzenegger's stunt double, so that's the second best thing. He's done one of our shows a couple years back, but he was famous for doing the overpass motorcycle jump.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that, too, because if you watch the movie, you can see it's Peter Kent on the motorcycle. They didn't have the CGI stuff to fix it up.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I'm curious, though, any thought about, I don't know if this guy even does shows, about Robert Patrick?
We've been talking about it. We've gotten some feedback on what it would take to get him there, and we're considering it. I mean, nothing's concrete, but we'll see.
Because that way you could corner the market on the X-Files nerds and, like, the Terminator marks. It would be amazing.
Yeah, we'd love to have him. I mean, he was actually in Sean Clark's film that the Black Waters of Echoes Pond, and I know he's done a show. He did an event maybe 2 years ago, so we'll see. No promises though.
Something else I wanted to mention to you though too, because I think we talked about this before. I saw that Rhino is actually going to be at Horrorhound Weekend in a couple of weeks.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that picture. It was just like Joey Styles, gore! That's it.
Is this, is somebody just offered to bring him in, or is this somebody that you guys wanted to come? And as far as like other wrestlers and stuff, is that something that you want to do in the future?
Well, we'll see what happens. The Tim Owen Harley show, they have a booth at the show, and they wanted to bring Rhino in as to draw up interest in what they're promoting, and that's how Rhino got involved. It was quite funny. A couple days after we announced Rhino, I was down at a store down here and ran into an old friend who just started his own wrestling organization here in Cincinnati, and they just had Shark Boy, and he's got all the contacts for getting all these other guys. He was talking to me about names that we can get. I definitely have a connection to do it. It's just I'd like to see what happens with Rhino, and you know, maybe we'll have another one at the next show and see if there's interest.
I just have a feeling though that aside from guys like Roddy Piper that have actually been in horror films, that the ECW guys would probably do the best at those shows, just because there seems to be like a link between hardcore kind of wrestling and horror fans and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, my short list would easily be, you know, Rob Van Dam and Raven and Tommy Dreamer. I mean,
I think
those are really nice.
Yeah, Rob Van Dam, if you want to get him, I mean, I think he's going back to WWE pretty soon, so he might be kind of hard to get in the next few months. But, yeah, I mean, I think Raven, Sandman, Tommy Dreamer, all those guys would do pretty good at these shows.
Yeah, and I got fond memories of all of them. I mean, I was excited about Rhino. One of my favorite wrestling matches was a hardcore match between him and Raven where he gores him through a shopping cart.
Yeah. I guess it was last year we went to a show in West Virginia that Rhino was at, and he's not a tall guy, but man, I mean, his freaking legs are huge. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody that had, I guess that's how he got the name Rhino, but yeah, really nice guy though. I mean, yeah, I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, I've met a lot of wrestlers, and I honestly can't remember any of them being a real jerk.
Have you ever met Ric Flair?
Yeah.
No. It's funny. I've even met Hulk Hogan, and that was like he was just at a party, and I asked him for his autograph, and he walked around tapping people on the shoulder. I don't know what I was thinking. It was one of those geek moments where you forget that you don't have a pen. And I was also a teenager, but yeah, he went around asking people until he found a pen. It was the nicest thing I ever saw a celebrity do.
One of the weirdest experiences I ever met a wrestler was in Atlanta, Georgia. We went to Abdul the Butcher's House of Ribs. And I was like, I'd seen a lot of the matches and stuff, the hardcore stuff. He was one of the nicest freaking guys. And again, he was looking for batteries for our camera. We didn't have batteries for our camera. So that was how cool he was. I mean, a lot of the wrestlers, yeah, aside from Ric Flair, a lot of them are really cool. I mean, we met, like, they used to have the Pillman Memorial thing in Cincinnati. Did you ever go to that?
No, unfortunately, I never did.
And that's the first time I met Flair, and they had, you know, Mick Foley and Ricky Steamboat.
The Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
With cool. Chris Benoit before, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Benoit.
Yeah, it's a whole other story. But anyway, back to the show, though.
As you can see, I could easily put together some sort of wrestling-based show, but it's just not the business.
So what about for the Columbus show, though? Do you guys have, like, a band, any bands lined up, or?
All we got is the Coney Island Rock and Roll Roadshow is going to be playing on Saturday night, and they have two musical acts with them, and it's constantly changing, so we still don't have the final names of who's going to be performing, but there's two musical acts and a burlesque sideshow type of thing, and then it's going to be followed by Joel Robinson, who, you know Joel Robinson, right?
Oh, yeah, everybody knows who Joel Robinson is.
He's going to do, like, a club chaos dance party that's going to pretty much go from 11 or 12 until everyone wakes up the next morning.
Well, the other thing, too, we haven't even mentioned this, though, but this is also like a huge horror host tribute show, too. Like, there's 30 or, I've seen at least 20 or 30 on there.
What is it, like the third year in a row you've been doing that?
Yeah, it's the third year. This one's a little bit more subdued just because of the move to Columbus. It's a lot more difficult to kind of manage everything when we're trying to put together a show in a brand new city, but it's still a lot of great people showing up. And what's going to be neat, we just updated our events page. We're doing a tribute to the Universal Shock Theater package, and it's going to be a 3-hour event that's hosted by all the horror hosts. It's going to be really fun. I can't wait.
Very cool. Something I wanted to ask, though, as far as running these conventions, you mentioned this is like you've been doing shows for like 5 years, the Whorehound Weekend shows. How difficult is it to come up with fresh ideas for these shows? Because I can only imagine, I mean, a lot of these other shows, like the Fright Night show in Louisville, they're doing more of the pop culture thing now.
Yeah, and I really like what he's doing. I've been talking to him for weeks about Jonathan Rhys Davies.
Yep.
And just hoping that came through, and it did, and I just... Lord of the Rings. It's kind of fun. Well, I get a nerd out a little bit. But it's difficult. March was very difficult because we had a list of what we wanted to do, and half of it didn't even happen. And then, you know, unfortunately, some of the key names like Heather Langenkamp and just the other day Ashley Lawrence having to pull out of the show. It just, when you come up with these things, there are those little instances where they kind of sting when you lose one of the names, but it's still going to be fun. It's just the September show right now, unless disaster strikes, I mean, the lineup's going to be so well thought out. I mean, I'm still in disbelief when I told you what we were doing the other day, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, without revealing it, it sounded pretty cool, right?
I'm sure everybody will, without, you know, giving the details, whenever you want to announce it, I'm sure there'll be, you know, at least 300 or 400 nerds on Facebook shit themselves. So.
What's really nice is what's going on, we can tie it in with a couple other projects that are happening, like some video game stuff. But, yeah, after this show is over with, I don't know what we're doing.
Well, I'm sure that, like, you'll probably catch some shit from people for, like, some of the cancellations. But to me, it's like, you can only expect that to happen. The important thing to me is that the person that's doing the show actually announces the shit.
Yeah.
A lot of times you'll have
rather
people,
than the day of the show.
That's
uh-oh.
The thing that always pissed me off. And a lot of promoters will actually do that. They'll just, even though they know people aren't going to show up, they won't announce it until like a day before or something.
Yeah, I mean, I've bought plane tickets to go to shows where the main reason I went canceled the day of the show. I get it. I mean, I was just talking to Sean earlier today about how frustrating it is when one of his clients has to cancel. That's his least favorite part because he feels so helpless. And I'm like, yeah, well, imagine how I feel. You feel helpless. And it's like, I feel helpless because you feel helpless. And then the fans, you know, it's like they're relying on us to rely on him to rely on the celebrities. It's
right.
It's a lot of possibilities for things to go wrong.
Well, of course, as always, and you know who I'm talking about, that group of people that play the blame game, you know, and you're the one, I mean, it's on you pretty much as far as when people cancel, I mean.
Yeah, and there's a nice group of people who like to band together and cause chaos on the internet and make promoters feel like crap. And it always makes me laugh because the same stuff that happens to our show or Fright Night or Scarefest or anyone. It happens to Monster Mania. It happens to Spooky Empire, Rock and Shock, across the board. And it's just funny when you can see certain individuals out there just pick which show they want to, you know, they want to beat up on the internet.
Right. Well, I think something, too, that a lot of people don't think about is you try to get a lot of these guests as first-time guests. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of a risky thing to do. A lot of people don't realize because you don't know how reliable these people are.
No, they're the worst because, I mean, worse in the sense of risk of cancellation because you don't have a track record of how they react to, you know, everything and how busy they are. You know, when I book Bill Moseley, I know that Bill knows how this works, you know?
Right.
And he's going to be the most... He's going to treat this the most respectable because he knows how this convention scene works. But someone like who's never done a show before, I was going to name a name, but I guess that's not what
I'm going to do. That's not appropriate, sir. Not on this show. This is a tactful show.
We don't call anybody out on.
There's a lot of risk there, especially if they're a working actor.
I remember one in particular, though. I think, I don't know if Sean still represents him or not, Lou David from the Burning,
oh,
I think.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I saw that he was doing a show again. I don't know if that actually happened or what.
I think it's Monster Mania.
There's a story behind that, and honestly, I don't know if that's a public story or not. But let's just say that Lou David is actually doing this booking, and... the two shows that he was canceled out of, let's just say that may not have been Lou David.
Oh.
Wow. Oh, shit.
That's pretty bad, man.
We used to talk about that, though. Like, what would keep anybody from, like, that didn't have a role where you saw their face from just claiming that they were the guy or whatever, but...
That, unfortunately, that happens, and there are people out there who like to cause problems and mischief, and they play pranks, and it's rough. But, No, I mean, it just goes back into the risk of what the promoter has to deal with.
I was thinking, I mean, CK and I were talking about this before we did an interview. I think people should really, like, try to be a little bit more sympathetic because it's a no-win situation, really, if you think about it. Okay, if you book guests that you know are going to show up, then people will say, like, okay, he's just booking the same guests over and over again. If you try to take chances and somebody cancels, then they'll get pissed off because they cancel. It's like... You have to take some risks in these shows, otherwise
it's going to be the same show over and over again. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen people blame, you know, when someone gets canceled, I see the blame going around, and I've been doing it long enough to know that there are certain aspects of blame that goes on certain people's shoulders, and you know, did the promoter get a contract? Did the celebrity actually have film work, or, you know, I appreciate the when promoters are a little honest about, you know, they could just be a straight so-and-so has to cancel, thanks.
Right.
But it's rough.
Well, and, something else that a lot of people may not realize, and they talk about it on the internet, of course, too, we talked about these sort of people. There are certain people out there that think the promoter of said convention, doesn't have to be Whorehound, whatever, controls how much the celebrities charge, which is hilarious. I mean, that concept alone, because some of these shows, like Whorehound, I mean, I don't know how many guests you typically have. You know, what is there going to be somebody sitting there watching a guest making sure, oh, no, you've got to charge $30, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are instances, I think, which that rumor begins from. I mean, I just said earlier about setting Corey Feldman's price. There are certain celebrities, when you book them, that they are not going through an agency that's not handling their photos, that's not handling anything. They're just there to do what you want them to do. And that's very rare for us to have a celebrity like that, but it does happen. I think some things other people may forget is there are some conventions out there that are run by managers. So technically, if you want to get technical, they are setting the celebrities' prices because their guest list is their own clients. It's a little bit of a conflict of interest, but it exists.
Hmm.
Yeah, that is a little bit of a conflict of interest if you've got a whole show based around your clients. That's like, but anyway, now, lest we forget, though, that there is actually a magazine involved in this, and it's not just like the convention scene. So what have you got coming up for the magazine? Any, like... In the next couple of months.
Yeah, the new issue is shipping right now. I don't know if how many people have it in their hands yet, but we got a huge Dark Shadows issue. Interviewed Tim Burton, did a huge retrospective on Dark Shadows. I don't know if you guys are into that.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I mean, for a while there, I was pretty heavy in the Dark Shadows. But then I realized, you know, as the show goes on, it's like, it's way too slow paced. So I'm looking forward to the movie that's coming out and all that. For sure, just because I don't have the... Man, those shows, like the storyline in those shows, I mean, it's a soap opera. It's just so slow, you know.
Yeah, they have to drag it out as much as they can, otherwise they're going to run out of shows back then.
Right.
How many seasons of that were there? There had to be.
Well, there wasn't that many seasons, but, I mean, as far as just, you know, it was a show that was on half an hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know how many different hours...
But I know that there's, what is that box set that was just announced? It cost $500.
Yeah.
It's 100 discs.
I'm going to lock myself in a room and just watch that.
Well, was it on for like 5 or 6 years or something? And then like...
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and so just add that up, how many hours that would be. It's crazy.
Yeah. That was a rough one because, honestly, the only person on staff who are regular staff members who's really in the Dark Shadows is Jessica Dwyer, so... We had to rely a lot on her. You know, we have a rule. not to write about everything we know. You know, you want to make sure that you're writing about stuff that's going to appeal to other people. And Dark Shadows probably is the biggest example of that, because we really went into that one.
Right.
It was a little uphill battle to get that issue done, but I'm very happy with the results. I think it's one of the better issues we've ever done.
And you guys have a pretty knowledgeable staff, too. I mean, do you ever have problems, like, because a lot like our show, you guys do a lot of retrospectives and stuff like that. Because the mainstream horror scene just sucks so much dick right now. I mean, are you ever in fear of, like, what the fuck? Am I going to run out of material eventually, you know?
Yeah, we've passed on opportunities. Obviously, when Elm Street came out, we could have done an Elm Street article.
I think that was a good move. In retrospect.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, we've skipped on obvious retrospectives, just because if we did them now, we wouldn't have anything when issue 200 comes along. That's why we've done retrospectives like The Prowler, which we got a lot of people questioning why we did that one.
Right.
But, I mean, I was just working on for the program, we're going to do a From Beyond retrospective. I thought that was pretty fun.
As far as the mainstream stuff, like I was talking about before, like, I mean, I was just thinking, like, have you ever seen, since, I guess, the mid-90s, it seems like the mainstream horror is just, like, kind of just stagnant completely. I mean, what are your thoughts on the scene right now? Is there anything that you've seen recently that you'd recommend, like, new stuff?
I mean, here's a question for you. You say mainstream horror, but if you look back at all the classics, like Evil Dead and Reanimator and, you know, all the great films we remember, none of those were mainstream horror, you know?
That's true, but, I mean, you're placing movies like that with, like, Santa Claus versus the Zombies and shit now. I mean, these movies that come out, independent
Shark
movies.
Sharkpuss.
Independent movies now are, like, a completely different animal, so.
Yeah, it's a lot of filtering. I mean, unfortunately, most of it's foreign, the good stuff. It's mainstream.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, as far as the amount of stuff that's coming out, I mean, there's just, I don't know if the studios are just, you know, they have cold feet as far as the, you know, releasing the movies, you know, to a wide audience or what, but, I mean, there's just not hardly anything anymore. It seems like it's kind of sad, really.
Yeah, it seems like studios are less competitive, too. It was bugging me for years when the Saw had its release date. And it's like, that's fine. People are going to go see Saw. But why can't you just release something else? I would like to see a little bit more competition between studios, especially with horror films. There could be some good stuff. Most of the direct-to-video stuff you see may have been pegged for theatrical. You know, I know Cabin in the Woods, which is about to come out. There was a very distinct possibility that was going direct to video at one point. And then you look at stuff like Trick or Treat, which is one of the better films of the last 10 years. That was supposed to go direct to video, or that was supposed to go theatrical.
Yeah, that confused the shit out of me too. After I watched it, I was like, I mean, this is the same Warner Brothers, like, it's the same damn company that released the Elm Street remake. I mean, it's just what the fuck, you know? Don't they watch these movies?
No, and it was a lot better. And it could have been, you know, if Lionsgate released Saw direct to video, we would have never had, you know, that resurgence of horror. I mean, they just, I cringe thinking what we could have had if Trick or Treat went theatrical and became a hit.
Well, I think that there was, I mean, there's no way it couldn't have been a hit. I mean, if they would have marketed it the way it should have been, you know, release it, you know, the second week in October, something like that, it would have done great.
Yeah, I mean, how many people out there do you think know what the word anthology means to this day? You know, like, that was something that was so important back in the day. And when's the last time an anthology, just an anthology period, was in theaters?
I don't really know. Yeah, I can't even think of the last one, really.
No, me either.
The curious thing about that movie, too, is that that movie actually had Anna Paquin in it right around the time True Blood was blowing up, too. They had so many different ways they could have marketed that fucking movie.
Yeah. It's, how do you screw that up? And it's... I don't know. I mean, it's still frustrating.
Yeah. I will never understand the big studios, but I guess that's...
At one point, they knew that they were going to do something big with it because they licensed it for toys. They licensed it for comic books. They were really gearing up. It was, I don't know if someone at the head of the studio just quit and the new guy just didn't like it.
Yeah, that seems to be the case a lot of times because we were talking to Michael Felcher about, some of the home video people, like at Sony and Lionsgate, that they've just, people have lost their jobs or quit or whatever else, and it's impossible. I mean, like, Sony didn't even want to release Fright Night on Blu-ray, and, a year or two earlier, they had Zombie Strippers come out on Blu-ray.
I forgot about that.
We get
to see stuff now in the theaters, though. Like, what was that one movie that we saw with the Exorcist shit in it?
I don't know.
Devil Inside.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah. It's like, why? Why is that the thing that, like, is the mainstream theatrical
Because Paranormal Activity 3 made, like, a fuck ton of money. But,
Yeah, I think that we liked Paranormal Activity 3 a lot more than we liked The Devil Inside. That damn movie was ridiculous. Did you see The Devil Inside?
No, I did not.
That's a good move. Anyway,
again, I guess we just want to reiterate Whorehound Weekend in a couple weeks. It's going to be a huge show. We're looking forward to it, and... we look forward to see what happens in September as well. I know it's going to be even bigger, even better.
Yeah, that hotel, our regular Marriott Indianapolis East, they just remodeled a huge chunk of it. And there's more space. It's just we're going to take over the hotel. It's going to be crazy.
Well, I mean, I can just remember from last year the show in Indianapolis, the hotel where you had the, I think it was the first time you had the entire hotel.
Yeah, we got so out of hand they couldn't rent any of the hotel to anyone else.
Yeah, because I remember the 2010 show that was just fucking insane.
Yeah, they had people staying there from like a little league tournament, and they're like, "We're never staying here again." there was a great moment where teachers came in with blankets and put blankets up in front of the hallway so the kids could come into the hotel and not see the shenanigans that are taking place at the and just in the bar area. It was crazy. I was like, wow, people were real sensitive.
Yeah, I remember they sold out of food at the restaurant. Was that last year or something?
Yeah, it was last year.
And I was like, God damn, like they sold out of, and they knew they were coming. They knew that the show was coming. So, I mean, the Indianapolis show is like definitely, it's just a huge party every year. And it's one of those shows where you can just set up, with people just like you and, drink and do whatever else.
My favorite tidbit that I always like to brag about is I got the guy who's in charge of the ATM at the bank. I have his cell phone number. And as soon as I hear that the ATM's empty, he's in his car.
Welcome back here to the show. I'm Uncle Bill once again, and over here is the Creep of Kentucky hitting you all.
Hello, folks. Hi.
So,
if you think I hate you, I probably do.
So we just had a long discussion with our good buddy Nathan about Whorehound. That seems to be an exciting show that's coming up.
He's got a lot of stuff planned. And got some funny stories regarding certain people and shit like that. And some big names. You got Linda Hamilton, folks, coming to Whorehound.
And I think
in September, baby.
I think it'll get bigger, too. I don't know. I get a feeling. I hear things about things.
No thing or two about a thing or two.
I think there'll be things going on. But anyway.
So anyway. I want to definitely let everybody know that we will be there Whorehound weekend, Columbus. It's, you know, we're just going for fun. I think our first show the whole year where we'll have a table will be Fright Night. So, that's a long ways off.
That is. But honestly, I'm glad because I don't like having a table. I never have. Well, in the very, very beginning I did. But then after that, I don't, it's fucking annoying.
I like getting paid.
Yeah. I don't like standing around like shit.
Yeah, but a lot of times, though, like some of those shows are so goddamn jam-packed, though. It's kind of good that you're not out amongst
them. I hate that, though, man. I hate not being able to do anything or like feeling like you can't leave. You can't do it, go out and go anything because something's going to happen or it's just annoying.
Somebody's going to rub on you.
I don't like it. If I go to a show, I'd rather just go as a fan, which is luckily what we're doing in this show. So,
yeah, so enjoy yourself, Uncle Bill.
I'm going to.
Interestingly enough, yeah, we don't have any, as far as I know, we don't have any commitments or anything. So we'll be able to do whatever we want.
Yeah, I know that we'll both be committed to getting drunker and shit.
That's probably true. That seems to be our big thing now.
We're alcoholics, folks. We're sorry.
So, other than that, 2 weeks from now is Whorehound weekend. So, like I know we have said we would do a show every 2 weeks. What I'm thinking is, maybe, just maybe, we will be able to do a show that week, but do it kind of like a diary thing, like an on-the-road type diary deal. So, depending on what I bring, I don't know if I want to bring my laptop or any of that shit, but I will have my phone, and we'll be able to record some updates and stuff, and who knows, I mean, maybe we'll get some other people on there and stuff, too.
Yeah, so, you never know what's going to happen to these shows. If we could possibly get people on there, like, talk to different people, maybe some of the celebrities.
Yeah, some of the people
out
that we've already kind of know. I mean, Steve Dash is going to be there. He's a pretty funny guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a good guy, too.
You never know. I mean, it just depends on how crowded it is, and because this is a first-time show for Columbus. They've never done it, so I don't know if... I'm sure there'll be a ton of people there because it's not too far from Cincinnati.
Yeah. So, if you're in around Columbus around that time, you should come to the show and come see us, and we'll sell you stuff and be your buddies and rock for your party.
Holler, holler. Holler at your boy. So, also, what I'm planning on debuting next week, and a lot of people don't realize this, we did do some new commentaries. And the first one is going to be up next week, Uncle Bill, because there's not going to be a show next week. We are doing an auction. So it's kind of a show. I mean, it's like 5 hours of us going on, usually 3 or 4 hours at least.
And how's that going to work this time? Is Slippy doing his this weekend and we're doing one?
I don't know if Slippy's doing one.
Or is he doing one? But you know he's doing one. He's going to be doing one. That guy's like the auction master. He's like...
But the commentary that we did this time isn't a drunken commentary, Uncle Bill.
Right.
It's one that we just did because we're huge fans of this particular movie. It's the very first European horror film that we've ever done. What is it?
It's All Fucking Chained. I do know that. But we're going to be, like you said, we're going to be doing a regular non-drunken commentary, one of the best Lucio Fulci films ever made. Probably, I think we both kind of agree it is the best one. The Beyond.
Yeah. And this is one of those movies that really kind of got me into the European horror stuff. I mean, I'd seen Gates of Hell before and I think Zombie before. But this one kind of made me want to go and look for other stuff. So, pretty cool commentary that we did, and we did it to the Blu-ray, but you can watch it along with any version of the movie. I'm pretty sure it'll work.
Yeah, and that, like I said, it's more like a fan commentary just because that is a legitimately one of our favorite both of our favorite movies, I think.
So that'll be up for download next week. In the meantime, like, I'm amazed at how many people are still buying some of the commentaries that we did, you know, years ago. Some of the really old ones that are still up.
Well, I mean, we got to bring this up, too, on the show, because eventually, it has to be in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine, we've got to do another commentary, too, because there was a thing on the auction where we actually auctioned off a commentary. Like, anybody could bid, and we would have to do a particular commentary, whatever that person chose. And I think Seth Draken won and ended up picking John Carpenter's The Thing. So we will be doing a commentary over that at some point in the near future, yeah. I guarantee.
Well, hell, maybe next week we'll offer it again to somebody else. So, because we normally do two.
Right.
So maybe we could do that again.
Right. And if we do that, by the way, if we do the auction that way, you get to pick whether you want it to be a normal commentary or a drunken commentary. And you also get to pick whatever movie you want. It doesn't have to be a horror film either.
Yeah, if you want to, you could pick Fried Green Tomatoes or something.
Which I would actually love. To do like a drunken commentary over something like Fried Green Tomatoes would be one of my dreams, really.
Yeah, so all that stuff's upcoming. You know, a lot of people bitching like we're doing the show every 2 weeks. But honestly, like I think we're doing more shit now than we ever were, really.
Yeah.
I mean, counting these auctions and stuff are like 5 hours long. So
I don't think that right now we could do a weekly show, though, honestly. But
well, it'd
not
be
enough,
hard. The
there's
material,
not enough shit.
The material isn't there right now. I mean, especially even stuff to review. I don't even think we'd run out of shit to review in no time. Speaking of stuff to review, though, we do have a couple of movies that we've never really talked about on the show. We never talked about this series, I don't think, at all. So people will probably be excited to hear our thoughts on it. The first one came out a couple of years ago, and there was a big buzz online about this because it came out on demand first, and then the DVD and Blu-ray and stuff came like months later, I think, or a month or so later.
I actually saw that on demand when it first came out on demand, yeah.
Yeah, and it is from writer-director Tom Six. Depraved, disgusting enough to satisfy the most demanding midnight movie fan, according to Roger Ebert, which is amazing. I would have loved to seen Roger Ebert watch this fucking movie. Just to see the shit. Anyway, this is A Human Centipede, the original, and this is the unrated director's cut version from IFC Films, baby.
And then from IFC as well, the one that just recently was released on Blu-ray. I don't think it had much of a on-demand run from what I can remember. But this is the unrated director's cut of the Human Centipede 2 full sequence, which we'll delve into here shortly.
Yeah. So the first one, it's actually like the first one is really kind of more even a throwback to like the 70s exploitation movies, I thought. I don't know about you, but I mean, in the fact that, okay, these two American girls sort of get trapped by this German doctor, who's amazing, by the way. I mean, this guy makes the entire movie just because he's creepier than fuck. And that's another thing we were talking about in the midweek obliteration. Like, nobody has in American horror film has been as creepy as his name is Dieter Laser, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're stranded. Their car breaks down, and they just happen upon his house and go in, and of course, you know. Things happen, I guess. I don't know how much you want to give it away, but pretty much the doctor has this weird fetish with centipedes and ass to mouth and shit like that, and wants to create.
I think everybody has to know what these movies are about.
Yeah.
It became like a pop cultural phenomenon there after this movie came out. In a way, it's almost like a throwback to the 50s scientist, mad scientist movies as well, though, because here's this guy. He's like a textbook mad scientist, except it's not Frankenstein he's creating. He's creating like this human centipede out of all these people where he's basically adhering their eat all of their mouths to the other one's asses.
Yeah, woo! ATM, bitch.
And then, yeah, and then he has them, like, eat. That's his big thing, so they all shit, and, like, the shit will go into the other person's mouth, and they'll shit the shit out and shit into somebody else's mouth. It's a whole thing. But
yeah, honestly, though, like, the shit aspect is not as played up as you think in this. I mean, as much shit as people talk about with this.
Right.
I mean, there is one particular scene that's pretty hilarious. Where, like, the Japanese guys are like, oh, shit, I'm shitting. Just that line's great. Because they have to explain it. What he's doing, because, of course, you can't see the shit.
Right.
It's going straight to her mouth.
So, it's more, there's not a whole lot of plot to it. I mean, they just get trapped, and this guy, like, I think he actually goes out and gets them, doesn't he? Like, doesn't he? Some way or another, he captures them. Like, I think, and you think he at least one.
Yeah, he tries to, I think the movie opens with him kind of hunting people.
Right.
And, like, shooting them with darts, and so he can carry them back to his house. He wants to find, I don't know if they all have to have the same blood type or something or what, but he wants to find the perfect specimens, I guess, for his human centipede. And the movie's really, yeah, there's not really a big plot to it at all. But I was, like, I gotta say, I mean, I actually hadn't even seen the movie until, like, probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I actually liked it. I didn't think it was that bad.
It is in a lot of ways to me, though, the first movie, and I don't know why it wasn't as bad in the second movie. The first movie's incredibly depressing, though. It's like, it's just full of hopelessness. That's like the theme for the film, really, like towards the end and everything too, and just a lot of despair and hopelessness. And it almost put me in mind of like a Hostel kind of movie. It's just, you're watching it and you're like, you know, this is not something that I'm going to sit down and watch a lot of time, especially not if I'm feeling any kind of sadness.
That's true. You probably don't want to show this like anybody that's depressed or anything.
It's a horrible like depressing movie. But I mean, I didn't hate the film, but I'll probably never watch it again, to be honest. And if I was going to watch it again, it would be just to see like a couple of Dieter Laser's part in the film.
Yeah, he does a great job in the movie. I mean, I think that without him, I don't know about the movie being that successful, because he just looks nutty. He looks crazy. Yeah. He just does.
Looks like you ever seen that guy.
I don't know if there's something wrong with him or what, but he just looks crazy.
He's got that same look that one dude had. The guy that, Phil Spector. He's got that same crazy ass, like, look in his eye. Like,
yeah. Just, I mean, it doesn't look like there's anything wrong with him, really, as far as, like, you know.
Yeah.
But he just looks bizarre. He's a bizarre looking guy.
I had a really, like, strongly negative reaction to that film the first time I saw it, though. I don't know what. I think it was just, I was so burnt out on those type of kind of nihilistic horror films where nobody, it's like everything sucks, and at the end of it, nobody survives and all that stuff, so I don't know.
You thought it sucked ass?
It did suck ass.
I
just don't think I appreciated it as much during that time.
Honestly, though, IFC Films has this Blu-ray out. I think I got this Blu-ray for like $6 or something.
Yeah.
It's insanely cheap. I got it brand new, too, so. Yeah, I would actually, if anybody out there still hasn't seen it, I would highly recommend
it. You gotta see it, though. It's like, all of the other B-movies that came out that people dared you to watch, like in the 60s and stuff, the Herschel Gordon Lewis blood movies, it's like that, or the 70s, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Last House on the Left, stuff like that.
It's something that you gotta discuss with people.
It's a dare kind of a movie, you know?
Yeah. So, and honestly, like, I put it off because, like, mainly because you said you didn't like it or whatever.
I really did.
And it just didn't seem like, I thought it was going to pretty much revolve around shit eating or something. Which it kind of does, but I mean, not. I mean, you don't really see anything, any kind of, you know, fecal matter or anything in it. So.
It is an incredibly uncomfortable film to watch, even though you don't see a whole lot of special effects or anything. It's just, I don't know. But a lot of people, and I've been reading this online and in magazines and stuff, and I just do not get it. But transitioning into the Human Centipede 2, a lot of people are saying that this movie is a disappointment in some way from the first one. I for life me, do not understand that. Like, in fact, I like this movie. I like The Human Centipede 2, like, quite a bit more than I actually did the first one.
Right.
And I think I can tell you kind of why, too. There's something incredibly likable about the black humor in this movie. And the Human Centipede 2 is possibly one of the most disgusting movies that I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot. But somewhere, like, in the middle of it, you just begin to, like, inside, you're kind of, like, laughing about how far that this guy will take these movies. And it's like, and the main character is just so creepy and so almost unbelievably awkward that you start to almost kind of, like, laugh and just, I don't know, like, it becomes somehow enjoyable.
It has. The thing is, when you watch the first Human Centipede, you'll be thinking, how in the fuck could you make a sequel out of it? I mean, how could you do it? Is it a prequel? No, basically the story is the character, which is this, like, overweight midget retard guy. Martin, is that his name?
In the movie or his real name?
In the movie. Martin, I think, is his name.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
And he is the biggest fan of the Human Centipede. So much so that every day at work on his laptop, and I can kind of relate because I know people that are like this, that watch movies like this on their laptop and shit. He watches the movie over and over and over again and, like, draws even little sketches and stuff like the doctor did in the movie and is just fascinated by centipedes and the Human Centipede. So, in his demented head, he decides to really do it, you know. In this movie, The Human Centipede is a movie.
Yeah.
And he's a fan of that movie, right? Basically what I was saying.
Right, and this is supposed to be real. It's not supposed to be a movie. It's
right.
Like, the first one is supposed to be a movie, I guess, and this one's supposed to be him just copycatting the first one.
You think?
Right. So, it really is like a sad character, because as the movie goes along, you find out that he was, like, sexually abused as a child, and he lives with his mother, I think, and his mother's just incredibly annoying and puts him down all the time, and it's just really, like, a horrible living environment. He's just so weird in, like, a David Lynch kind of way. Like,
yeah,
that
David
kind of
Lynch should have got a hold of this motherfucker.
Yeah, and so it's just his day-to-day life working as, like, a car attendant in this underground, like, garage, and showing how he goes about kind of methodically picking up all these women and these guys to use as this human centipede. I think it's 12 people in this, isn't it? Isn't that his goal? Mm-hmm. Is to, like, put 12 people together, ask them out, except he doesn't, like, it's not like the first one where the guy was supposed to be a surgeon.
No.
It's like, he's just
kind of duct tapes.
Yeah, it's like
and staples her mouth.
He fucking, like, rips all their teeth out with, like, a pair of pliers and then staples their mouths around the ass and just duct tapes everything together. And it's just, all that's so horrible to watch. It's really.
And you see the shit in this.
Yeah, it's just, the end 15 minutes of this movie is fucking insane. It's like Tom Six just decided, all right, let's shove every sick, perverted, like, crazy image we can into this last 15 minutes. And he really does. And it's just like, you almost feel bad for watching it after a while.
I'm wondering where the fuck he finds these people. I think the Dieter Laser guy was an actor before. I'm pretty sure that the...
Wasn't he in Days of Our Lives, that Lawrence Harvey?
Oh, yeah. He was.
I don't know.
I don't think he was in anything, so I don't know where the hell he found him. And the interesting thing is, I don't know if it's by design or just the fact that they just found a really creepy guy and didn't want him to try to act that well. He doesn't say anything, but man, I mean, he does a great job.
Yeah. Hey, just like in the first one, he's really disturbing, but in a completely different way than the first one. It's like,
he's kind of like that dorky guy that you just see, like, in a library or something that nobody wants to.
Yeah.
You're just kind of, you know, freaked out by him. And I gotta say, I mean, and this is very similar because without him, much like the Dieter Laser character, this movie wouldn't have worked.
No.
I mean, it relied on the one star. And the guy's just so creepy and weird. And, you know, not a lot of people that look like this guy's willing to go places they went in this movie, which is even more, you know, I don't want to ruin it for a lot of people that haven't seen it. But, yeah, they go places in this movie where you would never, ever expect.
No. And it's the type of movie that not everybody's going to like, and a lot of people are going to have different opinions on it, and I'd say that a lot of people that like the August Underground movies will love this movie, and a lot of people that like ghost stories and the Rondo Awards are going to fucking hate it. So you pretty much know what you're getting into with this, though. It's just pure sickness and, like, depravity. But it really, in my mind, if you do a movie that's just pure sickness, it's like, it turns out like Hostel, and like you try to do something like that, it's not enjoyable to watch. But there's something about this movie that's not like that. There's something about this movie that's actually entertaining to watch. I can't put my finger on what exactly it is, but I think it's just the sheer black humor and insanity of a lot of it too. Like, they don't really take themselves seriously in it.
I think you're right. It takes you, like a lot of horror movies, a lot of movies in general, a lot of great movies, the directors take you in the movie, kind of, where, like, you're in this environment, and you know, you don't want to turn the movie off. It's just, it sucks you in, I guess. And this movie did, I gotta say. Like, you know, I was like, wow, this is just, it takes you to a whole nother, you know, dimension, I guess. The Twilight Zone of ass to mouth. Goodness.
It's like a gateway into ass to mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is Human Centipede 2, the director's cut. And, see, the special features on the Blu-ray, which we have here.
Blu-ray death!
Interview with the filmmaker, Tom Six, commentary with Tom Six, and Lawrence Harvey, who's the main guy. And it's set tour of the warehouse, special effects, making the poster and the deleted scene. So you can pick this up anywhere, I think, now. IFC put it out.
Pick it up. The time is now.
Buy now.
So that's Human Centipede Part 2. And the third one is actually in the works right now, so we can look forward to that here in a year or two.
I wonder who he'll get this time. Just like a bum off the street.
Maybe he'll get that guy back in it.
I'd heard that Dieter Laser might be in that one, actually, as like one of the main guys.
His brother.
Yeah. Derek Laser.
They're the heirs to the laser tag dynasty.
Right.
So, anyway, that is it for the show this week. Big thanks out to Nathan from Whorehound Magazine, Whorehound Weekend, coming up in 2 weeks. Be there or be square. and thanks to everybody for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks, bring you live Whorehound updates and stuff like that. And until then, I'm the Creepy Kentucky.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to the number one rated, often imitated, never duplicated ballers and shock callers of War Talk Radio. Freestyle for a while.
You are my special girl,
saw you, I said, hot damn. You are the one gagged on my dick and ate my ass with strawberry jam. Now we fucked for a year. And I want more. I want your rear. I want the whole, no one thinks. I want the whole that stinks. Cause like I said, you're my special girl. Let's do it in the ass. Let's do it till you scream. Your nightmare was my wet dream. Let's do it in the eyes. Let's do it till you scream. Cause your nightmare was always my wet dream. Since I was 10, I dreamt of ice. And now, it's within my grasp. And I must plead with you, bitch. No, I mean my special girl. Here, take these pills. I want to knock you out so you can't think. I want to stick my dong in the hole that stinks. Cause I know that if you're in clear thinking mode, you're not gonna let me treat your body like a commode. Cause when I fuck you in your butt, treat you like a slut, I plan on pissing down your throat, pissing down it hard. And I plan on killing you, bitch. Cutting you up into pieces. Throwing you in a ditch. Bitch. Cause you're my special girl.
This day the song should be "You're My Special Girl."